Hi all, this is Ian.
And this is Lauren.
Before we get started today, we wanted to get all of our plugging business out of the way up front.
I do not like it when you say plugging business, Ian.
Neither do I. As hopefully many of you have heard us talk about before on this podcast, Lauren and I have been working on our first narrative audio drama, The Vanishing Act.
Actually, it's a comedy, but yes. It is a weird and wild dive into the 1930s and features some of the guests you know and love from Not Another Film Podcast as over-the-top characters in pursuit of answers to a mysterious disappearance.
Spooky. The first episodes are out now on all of your podcast providers, so please give us a download if you like what we do here.
And if you listen to and enjoy the show, please make sure to leave us a review of some kind on whatever your preferred podcast platform is. A star-based review, actual written critique, and word of mouth are all still the best way to get a young baby bird podcast to grow into a giant dragon eagle with full-fledged sponsors.
All of that was incredibly transparent. So yes, please, while you're listening to us gab about our favorite movies from childhood, subscribe to The Vanishing Act and leave us a review. And, like I promised before on this show, if you also want to leave us a review for Not Another Film Podcast, I'll read it on air. I'm not above it.
He's not. So, again, the plan is to head on over to your podcast provider, subscribe today, and then let us and all of your in-person and digital friends know what you think about The Vanishing Act.
And one more time so it's burned into your brains,
The Vanishing Act.
And now, back to this week's episode.
Actual spoilers, like I know everything that's gonna happen in Dune unless they add stuff in for some reason, but like I want the first time that I see it to be in the context of the movie. Now I don't want to see something and
have
then
it tamper your expectations.
Like I didn't watch any trailers for like Parasite last year, no matter how much I heard like, oh, it doesn't spoil anything. It's like, no, it's like I want everything I see for the movie other than like posters or stills, like I want to see it in the context of the movie.
And that's why you've absolutely watched Star Wars 9, right?
Yeah, still I'm seeing how long I can go without actually watching it. I like for every like 3 months I'm reminded that I still
haven't. And I'm
seen
the one who reminds you. And on that note, folks,
well, I would have seen it by now if we weren't in a pandemic, because you would have come over and forced me.
Yeah,
because
I love watching shitty movies and man, it's a shitty film. But on that note, folks, welcome to another episode of Not Another Film Podcast. This is the podcast where we take movies we used to love as kids and we re-examine them in the harsh, sobering, and spooky light of 2020. My name is Ian Gears. I'm one of your co-hosts. I am joined today by Cole Goff, one of our other co-hosts. How are you doing, Cole?
Two
episodes in a month. I'm proud of you.
Yeah, it's big, putting up big numbers now that you're in Virginia and have less access.
This is 2018 numbers from you.
I'm coming in the clutch.
Well, because we're here to talk about one of our favorite genres. We're here to talk about spooky movies.
Yeah, you can always get me on for October is just, call me Mr. October. Which I think is actually like, I don't know, Alex Rodriguez's nickname or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah, baseball. I don't know football either. So that was a lame joke about how I don't know what sport Alex Rodriguez plays. I absolutely know.
Derek Jeter is Mr. November.
So then, yeah, then I guess A-Rod's got to be what? Mr. October?
Reggie Jackson is Mr.
Okay,
October.
Well then Reggie Jackson. So now you're fucked up. Anyway, let's talk about what we're going to talk about today. We're here to talk about the debatable 2007 or 2009 classic, Paranormal Activity. And I say classic because whether we like it or not, this movie kicked off the next like 5 to 10 years of horror movies, for better and for worse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's like, even though, Blair Witch was 1999, and that was kind of like the first really big found footage horror movie, this like reinvigorated it a decade later. It was just like, we got 5 sequels, it's like $1 billion.
Yeah, there's
franchise.
Another huge sequel coming out. This almost, you could argue, this kind of kickstarts Blumhouse. This was a Jason, yeah
right, because it's Blum, Jason Blum is involved with this, and it's like a $15,000 movie that grossed however many hundreds of millions.
Yeah, we'll ruin.
I won't step on that segment
for
later.
Yeah, but yeah, so this movie was huge. It came out in 2007 and played a couple film festivals, and then essentially the word got around that this movie was insanely good, or at least insanely spooky. and Paramount acquired the rights to this film. Like you said, this was a $15,000 budget. Paramount acquired the rights to this movie for $350,000. And we're like, we're going to distribute this shit. In, at this point, it was 2008 when they bought the rights. They distributed it Halloween of 2007. And yeah, it went on to be a huge, huge success. This was, it came out the same weekend as Saw 6, and it beat Saw 6 at the movie theaters.
That's, I in my mind, they're like closer to starting at the same time, I guess. But I guess Saw 1 came out
2004, in 2003 or 4. 2004. I think it was the same deal. It came out in 2003, were, was distributed in 2004. Out.
Okay, yeah, and they were just coming out, I guess, one a year at that, if at that point, right? If Saw 6 was coming out in 2009, 2008, or, I mean, because I must have seen it in theaters in 2009.
This movie or Saw 6?
Yeah, I didn't see any Saw in theater. No, I saw Saw 2 in theaters.
Didn't we see Saw 2 in theaters
with you? Yeah, we saw Saw 2 in theaters, and I don't think I've seen any of them. I think because we saw it with Christian. Left.
No, that was the third one.
Not to put Christian on blast. That was the third one. Okay, so maybe I saw two and three.
Yeah, because we went into the theater to watch the third one. We snuck into the theater after seeing Something Worse. And Christian got up and left because he was like, I'm not dealing with this shit. And that's fine because I remember being like, this movie's not that good anyway.
Yeah, and then Saw 4... I remember Christian and I went to one of your Parade Victims shows, and then he stayed over at my house afterward, and I watched Saw 4 on the computer, and he did something completely different on the other side of the room for like the hour and a half. It was a very anti-social.
You've told me that story a few times, and every time I think, what a weird sleepover that must have been. Like, two really, really good friends having a sleepover and not engaging with each other the entire time.
No, we were, like, talking throughout it. It's not like I was, like, keyed in on the movie, because it's like you said, it's like, I think Saw 1 and Saw 2 are fine, but after that, like, that movie, that series jumped the shark at, like, halfway through the second movie, and, like, they had seven more movies. That, yeah. Like, and now another one's being made.
Yeah.
Right? Like a prequel. But anyway, we're not here to talk about Saw.
When
right?
When we finally get to see whatever the Chris Rock Book of Spiral Saw, you know, Carillion's 2242 Saw comes out, then we'll talk. Then we'll do an episode on Saw. Because I am actually kind of interested in seeing that Chris Rock movie. But today we're talking Paranormal Activity. So we were just kind of briefly talking about our first experiences seeing this movie. But remind me of yours for the sake of the show.
Yeah, so I saw this in theaters with Christian, our friend that we were just talking about in relation to another horror movie, and Sydney, my now wife. We saw it in theaters. I went back and stayed at Christian's house, and like I said, it was like the last time that I like actually had trouble sleeping after a horror movie, which I still think is like I said earlier, there's like two scary things that happen in this movie, which is so it's kind of crazy, but. And then it actually like the first few years of college, like every year when they were releasing like the Paranormal Activity sequels, it like started this tradition. So like freshman and sophomore year, like me and our friend Eric Reif and like Tyler Warren and Will Heath, who are also our friends, we went to see Paranormal Activity 2 and 3 like in theaters when they came out, and then we went to see the fourth one I think when it came out, but it was sold out, so we saw Sinister instead or something like that. So this movie actually like kicked off like a really random like movie going tradition.
That's awesome
for me. Yeah, it is. So it's like I have like a very fond place in my heart for this movie, and it was funny going back because like I was at places like surprised by how much, because I've seen this movie a few times, but I was surprised at how like things that I'd forgotten that happened. Like there were, because I when I rented it and watched it the other day, I rented the alternate ending version on Amazon, which I hadn't seen before, but like there were these like little things that would happen, not really like the actual scare stuff throughout the movie, but like kind of little like interstitial scenes or something like that, and I didn't remember them at all, and I was like, oh, I wonder if those were added in. So that stuff like that was weird, but then like for most of the scare stuff I remembered it, so it's not really it's one of those movies where I don't know if it's really effective after you've seen it the first time, but I, like I said, I do have like fond memories.
Totally. Same here. I saw this movie in theaters with a couple friends of mine. I believe Logan Brown, Tommy McPhail were among them, but I remember sneaking into this movie because it was rated R and I was not old enough to get in yet. So we bought tickets for the, I don't know if you remember the Michael Jackson performing arts documentary, This Is It, but I bought tickets to that. And then we went in and snuck in and saw this movie. And I remember we were in a theater that had maybe like 10 people in it total. We saw it at like 2 p.m. and there was like maybe 10 people in this movie theater and we were all spaced out. But it was one of those incredible movie going experiences where because there were so few people in the theater, whenever a scare happened, we would freak out. And not even like an obnoxious way. We were just genuinely scared because I was kind of like realizing my fandom of horror movies at the time. And so we would get scared and kind of like scream or freak out or be like, oh shit, oh shit, oh shit. And the other people in the theater would be doing it too. And whenever like the scare happened in the cool down from it, in the denouement from the scare, everyone in the theater would look around at each other with like a, that was fucked up, right? Acknowledgement face. And it was so cool. And it became this really awesome communal experience, which is, I think, at its core, if I'm going to get kind of sappy for a second, the beauty of horror movies is that kind of communal experience when there is something genuinely scary that a whole group of people are going through, or everybody's kind of achieving the same high at once at the same time. I just think that there's something really cool about that, and there's something really there's something special about horror movies in that regard. I think it's the most instant satisfaction you get aside from just straight up comedies. It's why it's unfair that these two genres are lumped together all the time, and I think it's purely because of that instant satisfaction factor.
Yeah, it's definitely, they're definitely two genres where you like feed off the energy of the people that are around you a lot more. So it like really depends, like it's a totally different experience, like watching a horror movie like by yourself. I mean, I watched this at 6:30 in the morning on Thursday,
prime time.
Yeah,
the witching hour,
like,
you know,
alone and like compared, it's like, that's totally different. And like, but when I originally saw it the first time, we saw it at the Lynn Haven Mall Theater. It was like 8 o'clock on a Friday. So it was like packed. And like, that's like prime movie theater horror viewing experience. Just like that. Sydney and I saw Get Out the weekend it came out here. And there was literally not an open seat in the theater. And it's like top three movie going experiences in my life. Not just because Get Out, you know, but beyond just the fact that Get Out's like a truly special, like exceptional movie, but just like that crowd energy that you get from that. And it's a good point with comedies as well, because comedies are the other genre other than like horror that I think really gets that bump from like being in a good crowd.
Yeah. Yeah. I watched this. I've seen this movie now probably 4 or 5 times, and I've gone back. And for some reason, I keep thinking, and we'll kind of use this to segue into the conversation about the movie itself. I keep thinking in my mind, I'm like, yeah, the first Paranormal Activity is great, and then all of the other ones are shit. And then as time has gone on, it's been like, you know, Paranormal Activity is a bit overhyped. It's not actually that good, and the rest of them are shit. And then rewatching it the other day, spoiler alert for the ending, had a blast. And then I watched the second, third, and fourth ones last year when I was on a contract in Miami with a group of people that I was working with. As just kind of like it's October, we want to get in the mood. And the group had never seen the Paranormal Activity movies. And so I missed the first night, but I came for 2, 3, and 4, having never seen 3 or 4. And those movies are awesome and really, really fun. The third one especially, I think, is really, really good and very creepy. But
yeah, they do a very good job kind of like escalating and improving like the camera technique and everything in the second and third one. Like I don't remember it that well, cause I haven't seen the third one since I saw it in theaters, but I was reading like the Wikipedia entry on it and everything. But like, there's something in like the third one where Because it's set when Katie, the main character, is like a child, right? So it's like in the 80s.
Yeah, it's Katie and her
sister.
Like
that. And like there's something where like he gets like a camera, and like the camera, because like the basic, in the first one, it's basically like anytime something is scary is happening, it is like a stationary camera within like in the dark at night, with it like with exception to like the Ouija board and stuff like that. But even then, that's like a stationary camera. But like the third, which I think is like really effective. Like I said earlier, there's like two scary things that happen in this movie, but that's like after seeing it a few times and like you know
what's coming
each time, like with most horror movies. But like the first time you see it, it's like really good, just like the stationary camera, and you're like looking around the frame to see if anything's going on and like see if there's any small details. But like in the third movie, it's like the stepdad like sets up the camera on like a rotating fan or something, so like it'll pan and like parts of the room will be out of frame, and then it'll pan back, and like it, you do this like, I remember doing this whole like mental thing every time where I'm just like, all right, did anything change? But it like adds a whole other level of suspense, just like the camera's leaving this space and you know it's gonna go back, and like there might be something there, there might not. And they also just do a good job in all of the movies of just like escalating things throughout. Like the watching this, it's like interesting because there's never anything really that unexpected that happens. It's like there's the scene where he does the Ouija board, or he sets up the Ouija board and then they leave, but the camera's still on it. So you're like, okay, something weird's gonna happen with the Ouija board, and then something weird happens with the Ouija board. And then later there's like the scene where he sets the powder on the ground to catch footprints, and then the camera catches footprints. Like, so like for the most part, it's like exactly what you're gonna happen, like what exactly what you expect to happen happens, but like the way that it escalates over the course of the movie makes it still like pretty thrilling. And I don't know. I just think the throughout those first three movies, I've never seen the fourth one, but I think they do a very good job of like maintaining kind of like the same style while also adding these like these additional like filmmaking / camera work tricks and like things like that to add another level of suspense.
Yeah. Fourth one's fine. It's not the third one. I honestly feel like third one peaks, and that's because there is a twist at the end of the third movie that is very much kind of like, you're either still with this franchise or you're not. And
yeah, I remember really liking the ending.
Yeah, I remember being so like genuinely shocked by it, just being like, wow, did not think we were going to jump the shark this far, but I'm kind of with it still.
Yeah, it's like mini Hereditary.
Yeah, kind of. All right, so Paranormal Activity. Paranormal Activity is the story of a woman who is constantly haunted by a malevolent force dealing with a ghost in her house. And that malevolent force comes in the form of her boyfriend named Mika. He's a terrible figure that haunts her daily with his pestering bullshitness. And they're trying to...
He literally like for the first 25 minutes of the movie, like the only feeling you get is that he definitely does not think there's anything supernatural going on. He used this as an excuse to get a camera so he could try to convince her
that
to
is
make a
it.
Sex tape.
And that's the, like, you just explained like, the first 25 the first, minutes of this movie.
He spends the first 25 minutes of the movie where it's just like, every time he has the camera on her, he at some point, like there's a point where he tries to convince her, like he has the camera on them and like he's trying to like get things going, and he just like tells her that the camera's off. And I'm just like, that is
scummy.
So
well, and also like, and it's 2000, like the movie takes place in 2006, not saying that we didn't have discrete camera technology in 2006, but this fucking camera is, this is like a submarine on this dude's shoulder, and he's just like, come on, babe, like, it's my birthday, like, come on, and like, trying to be coy and sexy with a fucking, the Hubble telescope on his shoulder, trying to get her to fuck him. It makes no sense. It is the least sexy thing possible. And also, aside from all of that, this dude's got the personality of, like, Dane Cook's younger, angrier brother. Like, he is so annoying. And this is not a hot take here. This is, like, commonly plagued this movie. I don't know Mika Sloat personally, the actor who plays Mika. You know, hopefully he's a nice guy. But the character of Mika in this, and my dad actually brought this up because we were watching this together. And like I said earlier, he does not like horror movies. But every time he would do something like this, like trying to convince Katie to like film a sex tape with him or like gaslight her into being like, well, you should have told me you were haunted. Maybe like, maybe then I wouldn't have, you know, kept dating you or whatever. Like he would, my dad would even turn to me and just be like, well, we have to not like him because he's definitely going to die.
Yeah. It's just like every bit of escalation that happens in this movie is except maybe like with Katie, like calling the psychic or whatever, which might make the demon slightly angrier. Like, is just like, oh, definitely don't try to piss this guy off. Like Mika goes and he's like, I think we should get a Ouija board to try to communicate with it. And Katie's like, do not buy a Ouija board. I want you to promise me you won't buy a Ouija board. So then he goes and gets a Ouija board and he was like, I didn't promise I wouldn't get one. I promised I wouldn't buy one. And I borrowed this. It is just like he's such a tool. And then of course, like the Ouija board makes things worse. And then he like is like doing all these experiments with the powder and like it makes things worse. Like and then he does all this and then the minute she's like, I want to call that demonologist, he's like, wait, let's talk about this. Let's not be hasty. Let's talk about this.
It's the beauty
this.
Of having a screenplay with only two characters, really. Like you kind of get the psychic a little bit, like comes in and this, I want to get to the psychic soon. Cause he's funny as shit.
My favorite moment is
when he comes back in the second time.
Yeah, and he's like, oh, things have changed. I actually can't be here. And he like walks in and then locks out.
It's incredible. But that's like the kind of like writing beauty of having two characters is just like they just need to be foils for each other at all times, even if their minds change on certain aspects. So it's just like they have to be opposing certain things constantly, which is why Mika feels a little inconsistent sometimes. When he's trying to be more intellectual, he feels inconsistent because he's such a base character that just wants to bone with this camera on. But okay, let's get into this really quick because we establish, and there wouldn't be a fucking film series if Katie was not actually being haunted by a demon. So the demon's name, as we come to find out in this series, is Toby. Why are demons so afraid of demonologists?
I don't know. There's just like, there is a very consistent, like, demon logic, I feel like, that we all just have to accept in these movies. Like, I think, like, The Conjuring, like, they all follow the same logic where, like, once you start trying to oppose them at all, I guess it's just like showing any opposition. Because according to Katie, it's like for the most, like the first thing Toby does in this movie is just like Katie's keys are moved from the counter to the floor. So like if I had to put up with that every day of my life, like I don't think I need to like really call an outside help to risk escalating things. Like I think I can deal with that. Like Toby might have burned down their childhood home, but they have no proof of that. So it's I guess the logic is like if you bring in like the demonologist or like anything, it is like showing that you're making steps to try to end this like parasitic relationship or whatever.
This fucking like prankster. Like what are they?
Yeah, I mean, we have no idea, like, what he really wants, and it, I guess you, like I said, I haven't seen the movie in forever, and in, like, the third movie, you find out, like, that the grandparents are part of a cult or something.
Oh, yeah,
like
are
that.
We gonna, first off, are we gonna spoil the rest of the series in this?
Well, I just started to, so I didn't even start to, I think I skipped straight, we've now skipped straight from the beginning of movie one to the end of
That's
movie
fine, yeah,
three.
We're gonna spoil bits of this series, so just, you're either with us or you're against us on this.
Yeah, and I also might be spoiling them incorrectly because I haven't seen the second
one. Well, because there's a twist at the end of the second one that I was reminded of like two-thirds the way through this movie. That I was like, oh yeah, that's what happens at the end of the second movie, which explains some of the stuff in this movie. I actually think the twist at the end of the second movie is very, very creepy. Like, is actually like super fucked up.
The second movie is Katie's sister, right? It follows
and
Katie's
it's a
sister,
prequel,
and then
but
like,
you don't really find that out. It's like a prequel, and then is also running concurrently.
Yeah, it's a pre. Yeah, because I was gonna say, like, at the end of the second one, doesn't she like come and take her niece,
the nephew,
like that, or like
yeah.
her sister's kid? Yeah, the nephew. That's what it is. Yeah, like she comes and takes.
But
the
also,
baby.
Like the second one, her sister is being haunted by Toby, and this guy's he's a right demon. But at the end of it, they do this crazy ritual to put the demon onto Katie. And then when they visit Mika and Katie's house, and they're the ones who put the picture in the attic.
Oh yeah. I forgot. Yeah. About
so the
that.
Sister
yeah.
and her husband are the fucking assholes that started all of this, which is a great twist.
Really? Katie's just surrounded by narcissistic psychopaths.
This whole series could just be called, like, Gaslight the Movie. And it's, like, it's legit just every person just trying to gaslight Katie into being like, but you're haunted, right? And she's like, I thought I was done with this, but apparently I'm still fucking haunted. I don't get really why demons do this. Why demons are like, hey, I'm just going to fuck around a little bit. I'm going to move some keys. I'm going to, I'm going to throw an orange on the ground. I'm going to close a door. Maybe you'll notice and maybe you won't. Because before Mika buys a camera, we're led to believe that this has been happening for, a little bit, for a few weeks maybe. So it's like, to whose...
Yeah, like mostly innocuous.
So it's like, if this stuff happens enough to where Mika doesn't take it seriously and essentially, like you said, uses Katie's fear as an excuse to buy a camera, which is not what she asked for at all. Like, then I don't understand why a demon's not just like, oh shit, Katie now? All right, fine. Burn down the house night one. Like, I don't get why there's the ramp up unless it's like, I need to draw out the maximum amount of fear. So is this demon an artist?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, there's an art to scaring people.
It's Monsters,
yeah,
Inc.
Yeah, it kind of is Monsters, Inc., right? Like,
He's even got like three toes on his foot, so Toby might just be Mike Wazowski.
I really hope it is. Like, it's fine. It's like Mike Wazowski though in Monsters University, where it's like, not, he doesn't know how to scare yet. He doesn't realize he's better as like a stage manager. But yeah, I it's a thing that bothers me in these movies all the time, where it's like, we make concessions in the logic so that the structure of the movie makes more sense. When, like, I kind of feel like the first thing, as soon as a demon is somewhere, it's kind of like, fuck, all hell's breaking loose tonight. Unless the demon's, like, been kind of tired. And it's like, I've got, I only have enough energy to fucking knock these keys over. All right, I'm going back into my attic home.
The commute was hell today, no pun intended. Like, yeah.
Yeah, and so it's, but so Katie has been haunted. The detail that we get here that I find really fucked up is that she's been haunted since she was 8 years old. She tells Mika that. And that this shit happened and this thing like burned down her, it burned down her house when she was eight. She thinks, so there was a fire at her house when she was eight. She doesn't necessarily, she doesn't blame Toby for that. And Toby's cool with that because he's evading the law. He's been evading the law for like 20 years. Mika freaks out and he's just kind of like, why the fuck wouldn't you tell me that you had been haunted before? Like, what's up with you? And she's like, well, would you have believed me? And he's like, nah, but like, I don't know, maybe we wouldn't have moved in together. Like, he's like, why didn't you tell me on the first date or the 15th date or the 30th date or when we moved in together? And that's my question now is, when is the best time to tell your partner that you've been haunted by a ghost serially since you were 8 years old?
I would definitely say legally obligated pre-marriage.
Sure. Which they are. They're pre-marriage. Before, they're not even engaged.
Yeah. They're engaged to be engaged in Mika's words, which is very... as someone who proposed to his girlfriend 7 years into the relationship, I don't know if I can talk too much shit about that. But I'm just anti-Mika in most ways. But... that's a good question. I would say probably like third date, you start making jokes about
okay,
it.
Okay. Yeah. 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 Ease in.
And then and
you
so
knock
then,
the keys
so
over
then,
in the
like,
conversation.
Yeah. And to be like, oh, I guess at least it wasn't the demon this time. And then like hopefully they don't say anything. And then like you just keep doing it. And then hope in like maybe in like year three of the relationship, they finally ask like, you keep doing that demon thing. And you're like, no, like I'm actually haunted. Like I've never been joking.
Yeah, it's so okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think
like you put and then you put it on them. Like, why wouldn't you take this seriously? I'm haunted by
Yeah, that's the thing. You gotta flip it. as Missy Elliott yeah. says, and you've got to and put this on Mika, because really it's his non-committal behavior. You could also play it. I mean, I don't want to get into cast aspersions on people that are trying to get engaged, but honestly, she could use it as like if I was Katie, just saying. And I really like this performance. I like this actor. I kind of wish she was in more stuff because I think that she's genuinely really good.
She's very good in this movie.
But if I was Katie, I'd be using this whole thing as an excuse to get out of this relationship. Like, I'd realize, like, you know what? This motherfucker uses terms like engaged to be engaged. He plays his guitar while I'm knitting. You know, like, he just does all of this annoying bullshit. And then he buys a camera just to try and fuck me constantly. You know what? Oh, I think I'm haunted, and just bring that up as a way of scaring off someone. My dad had a great theory about this movie while we were going through it, and I kind of want to see this movie now, where he was convinced because Mika had the camera, and because Katie didn't want him to get the camera to begin with, that Mika had friends that he was letting into the house at night to fuck around to scare Katie. And that he was filming the reaction because he was like trying to make a gonzo horror film. And
it's a great theory,
right? And I was like, Hans, this is a great movie that you're pitching right now. And at the end, boom, shocker, it's a real demon. Like that
basically holds up until like the footprint. Thing,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah. Until the footprint and Katie getting dragged out of bed. I think it's a pretty,
Yeah, but I think the footprint thing is earlier, or is it later?
It's later. It's like one of the last things that happens. The footprint thing is like an hour into the movie, and then the last 20 minutes is all hell breaks loose.
Yeah, because the her getting dragged out of the bed is like the last night before. It's like the next to last night, right?
Yeah.
It's the next to last night we see.
Yeah. We'll get to some of this. So there are some things that genuinely scare me in this movie. But we get to, all right, here, what are my notes here? Yeah, so they hear weird sounds at night. They realize the sounds are coming from the ice maker. The keys get knocked over, but they don't think too much of it. I always think in my mind, when I think back on this movie and the actors that are in it, I always think that Mika is played by Eli Roth. And I always think that Katie is played by Jenna Fischer. Like, in my mind, those two are the stars of this movie. And then I have to see the real actors, and I'm like, oh, right, these are different people. But for the sake of this, I may refer to Katie as Jenna Fischer every now and then. Jenna Fischer tells him the entire plot of Paranormal Activity 3, where it's like, I was haunted when I was a kid, and, all this crazy shit happened. Our house burned down. But then after the house burned down, everything seemed pretty chill. Everything was for the most part, pretty fine. But now it's back. And her sister even makes an appearance in this movie, and she's like, yo, this thing is back. And her sister, who we later find out in 2 is the one who's putting this demon back onto Katie, is like playing all aloof and like, oh, no, you don't say. That's wild that this demon. She's got to be going into her car and freaking out like she just won the lottery. She's like, thank God this ancient, ritual worked, and I put Toby back onto my dumb younger sister. But the first thing that starts to really get creepy for me is we get this reoccurring filming trope where Mika sets the camera up. So it's looking at the bed at night and it's looking down the hall and it's in like night vision, and the time code will fast forward and they'll kind of like toss and turn in their bed and it'll, be all fast forward. And then it'll slow down. It's usually always around 3 o'clock, the witching hour. And something usually happens. The door will close or open slightly. Something will look like it's moving through the sheet. You'll see a light kind of flicker in the background. Two things in this trope that scare me the most, and then I want to know if there's anything in here that gets you. The first thing that genuinely freaks me out to this day, and it happens twice in this movie, is Katie gets out of bed and then turns and looks at Mika, and then the time code starts fast forwarding again, and you realize she's doing it for like 2 hours, and then she gets back in bed, and then, the morning happens. That's scary as shit. I do not trust that.
I agree.
And then the other thing that's really scary is when you're so trained to know that at night shit happens, that they do all of this and they show you the evening and the time code stops fast forwarding and it lets you watch and then nothing happens because Toby, I guess, hit a shit ton of traffic on his way from hell to reach this house in like Palo Alto or wherever the fuck it is. But yeah, when like nothing happens and you've just been trained to believe that like some shit's going to go down, I think this movie makes expert use of our expectations at all times.
Yeah. And that's like that. I think that's one of like the best parts of the three trilogies is that the entire structure of it in that way is super well done. Just like the fact that you usually know at night if it's showing you the camera feed that something's gonna happen, because like I think the full course of this movie is like 21 days. Like it's like the 21st, but you don't see 21 nights, right?
Seven,
you see
eight.
Like 7 or 8, something like that,
and a couple of those are duds.
So it's like, yeah, so you know, like you know, or it gets to night and you're like, okay, if I'm seeing this, something is gonna happen. And I think that whole like fast forwarding thing, it like even I'm just kind of repeating you at this point, but like the fast forwarding thing kind of like double dips on that and makes it more effective, because it's like, all right, so we're fast forwarding and then we're stopping and it's going at full time. So like it hit night and you figured something is going to happen, and then we fast forwarded through the time and wanted you to see the specific part. So now you know, like you're even more sure something is going to happen. And that's something that is just, I feel like this movie is pretty, I don't know, revolutionary with regards to like doing that. And I think it's been used more, but like it is so well done in these three movies, and it's such an effective, like simple, like theme to keep going back to, or like you said, like manipulation of our expectations.
You just brought up a really good point though. Like this does take place over the course of 21 days. Really, we only see about 7 or 8 days, and then only about 5 or 6 days does Toby actually do something. So Toby's working on like what, a 30% success rate? This is not good numbers for this guy.
Yeah, I mean,
is he rusty? He's been haunting his sister. Does he have withdrawals?
I mean, his name is Toby. I'm guessing he's from like maybe like the first circle of hell, like one of the outer, like he's definitely like a minor demon. Like this is not, you know, big time. Like we are not seeing like the demon from The Conjuring or anything like that. Like
Bathsheba, Bathsheba would wipe the floor with Toby.
Toby,
this weak ass demon don't know what he's doing.
Yeah, it's not a good look for my guy Toby. Definitely, like in my character rankings for this movie, it's definitely like, number one is the psychic. Number two is Katie. Number three is Toby. And then like way down, number four.
Yeah, way down in the hole.
But like, but Toby is just like, his effectiveness really drops.
I think you could do, if you did a fan drawing of Toby, he would look kind of like Nick Kroll's first hormone monster in Big Mouth, the little one. I think that's kind of where you could go with Toby. He's just like, but then they describe him as this like tall old man. He's kind of like the demon in The Conjuring too. But again, I don't buy it. Like, I don't think he's got one move really. He sneaks and then he pulls you out of bed. He doesn't do anything else. I guess he's an arsonist, but
At this point, I bet the sister burned.
You know what? At this point, I would like, that's genuinely what it is. I think Toby's like one of those Zodiac copycats, and he's just taking credit over and over and over again for like murders and for scares and spooks that he didn't actually commit. He's just taking credit for things that did not happen. Like, I think like maybe a bat flew in and knocked over the fucking keys, and they're like, the keys got knocked over, and Toby's like,
and then found its way out.
And Toby's like, God damn it, that fucking vampire bat beat me to this house again. I'm just trying to find some family to get to. Like, I really think that this is a story of a shitty demon or a minor demon.
I would agree with that. It's like, we're not dealing with Bathsheba. This isn't Paimon from Hereditary. Yeah. Like this isn't, we're not dealing with when hell sends their demons, they're not sending their best. You know, well, that's what I'm saying.
I think genuinely maybe this is why it ramps up. I don't even know if he came from hell. I think he's maybe trying to get his way back into hell. Maybe he's trying to earn the Boy Scout badge to get in. Because a lot of this, he's like, oh, I know. Or he's like a really traditional, like he's like a boomer ghost. And he's like, you know what'll scare the chillens? I'm going to knock over their keys in the night. That'll send them all afright. And it's...
There's literally one of the nights is like just the two guest bedrooms in the back of the house, and their lights flicker on and off a few times, and like nothing else happens.
They're
right?
all it's traditional like, scares, or it's like the
episode of SpongeBob with the hashtag. Yeah, slasher, also scarier than Toby.
It's like, you know what the scariest thing to me is? Being outside without a blanket, like sends Katie outside. Yeah, that's got to be what this is. It's about a minor demon trying to get back into hell because he got kicked out for not being scary enough. So, let's talk about this psychic. Why don't you introduce this character to us?
Well, he is basically just like, he seems like he's mostly like a middleman for the demonologist, because he comes in the first time and he's like, yeah, there's like definitely something here. I can't do anything. I've got a friend who's a demonologist, because there's always a demonologist.
And he's always your friend.
Yeah, and he's like,
at the university?
I would definitely recommend not doing anything to make the demon mad. Don't do anything to escalate this. Which Mika is just like, thinking about his stocks for the day or whatever, how his portfolio is doing, because he completely ignores.
He's a fucking day trader. Mika is a day trader. Yeah. Mika's like Matt McConaughey in Wolf of Wall Street.
And then he's just like, yeah, I'll give you the number of the guy. And then they try to call the guy, and they're just like, he's not available.
Yeah, because Toby answers the phone. Like, hello?
so then they call the psychic back, and the guy walks two steps in the door and is just, they're just like, Katie's just like, thank you so much for coming, like things have gotten worse. And he's like, yeah, I'll say, I've gotta go, I can't be
at the risk
right
of making
now.
An incredibly
he's,
insensitive
he's mad
yeah
that
and
I'm
at
here.
The risk of making an incredibly insensitive comparison, the two scenes that we get this psychic, it's legit first wave Fauci versus second wave Fauci. Like, it's like you're getting somebody who's coming in being like, yeah, this isn't good, you should definitely start taking precautions. And then he comes back later and he's like, yeah, no, this is straight up awful. You didn't listen to anything I said.
If you could, I would recommend, I'm going to New Zealand now, and I would recommend you do the same if you
yeah,
have.
I am moving into Hobbiton. Get ready. I'm moving in. It's the only maskless community in the world. But... Yeah, I love the fact, I love when psychics are in movies like this. It's part of why I think I'm so mad that I was so late to the Conjuring hype, but like, I really like those movies a lot, and part of it is because there is this confidence of someone who comes in, who knows with their heart and soul something that is not visible, and not tangible to anyone else but them, so it. I don't know. I'm speaking for myself here. I'm sure there are people that really believe this stuff, and I don't ever want to, you know, you believe what you believe. But it's never not funny to me to watch someone walk into a room and just go, yeah, there's something here. I'm like, yeah, a room? What do you see? Because...
It's literally just like Ghost Adventures.
Yeah.
Like, there's definitely a ghost in here.
It's like, who says who?
But... what? Says this infrared camera that's gonna go off, like, and it's my favorite recent entry into the demonologist movie demonologist hall of fame is Vincent D'Onofrio in this in
so Sinister. True oh my he's bad
got like
thousand
two
in that movie
over, yeah he's great. He's definitely, we rewatched that a few weeks ago, or I think it was Sydney's first time seeing it. It was my like third time seeing
it's a great
it.
Movie until
yeah,
the final
he's,
frame
he's great in that movie. Yeah, oh yeah, oh my god, so I wanted to turn the movie off before it got to that, just because I was like, this shouldn't be ruined for Sydney, but she really
see,
liked
here's
it.
The thing, I kind of, the only thing that makes the last shot of that movie like where I can kind of swallow that pill is that it takes a lot of heat off of the rat in The Departed for the worst final frame in a movie. And I'm just like, you know what?
Yeah.
Sure, give me this fucking, like, scarecrow running at the screen. I don't care, like, whatever. Like, but yeah, I never trust psychics, I never trust demonologists in movies. But this guy's great because, you know, he does look so straight-laced. And in any other movie, in any other world, I bet this dude has brought this same costume, this same composure, and this same characteristic to playing, like, a stockbroker, or to playing, like, a high school guidance counselor, or to playing anything. He approaches it so casually, and it makes it that much funnier when he's just going in like, oh, yeah, there's definitely a presence in here. It's cold, cold spot. Walk through a cold spot. That's a ghost. That is a ghost.
The much like you said, the guy that you always think of Mika as
Eli Roth.
You said Eli Roth and Katie as Jenna Fisher. Whenever I think about the psychic in this movie, I think of it as Trevor Nelson, who plays the lawyer in Parks and Rec, and he plays the number one demon, ironically enough, in The Good Place. And he plays, I think, Kevin in
Brooklyn Nine-Nine,
but he's in all these shows. But like that, like straight laced, yeah. Just like middle aged white man I can't picture that actual actor in my head right now because I just see
this. Yeah, Trevor, this demonologist Wilson, doesn't drink coffee after 9 a.m. because it'll keep him up all night. Like, that's what this dude's whole vibe is. And Toby is like, I only drink coffee after 9 a.m. because I'm a rebel, young sport. Let's talk about the... So that's essentially the setup. That's act one. Act two of this movie, everything gets ramped up even more. The difference between act one and act two, the major difference, is Katie. Act two, Katie is the best character in this movie because she's fucking had it with everything. Much so that, like you said, Mika gets a Ouija board. He's like, I want to get a Ouija board. And she's like, what the fuck? Dr. Anthony Fauci told us not to anger Toby anymore. I don't want to have this shit on my house. I just want to go back to, I'm a student. I just want to go back to doing my schoolwork and maybe getting engaged to you for some reason. And I don't want to fucking, you know, engage with this demon anymore. And Mika's like, okay, cool. I won't buy a Ouija board. He comes back with a Ouija board. And he's, you know, he does that whole, like, well, I didn't buy it, I borrowed it. And she's got this incredible line where she's like, I told you not to get a Ouija board. You come back in with the nicest fucking Ouija board I've ever seen in my life. She's like, she runs at him like Talia Shire in Goodfellas. It's incredible. She fucking, like, she just takes out his laundry. It's incredible. She's so good in this section of the movie. Because there's watching it now, I'm at the point where I'm like, I don't know if she's starting to be infected by Toby, or if she's starting to just realize that she's made a 3-year mistake with Mika, or if both are happening simultaneously.
I think both are happening simultaneously, because Mika never does anything positive in this movie. And I think we still need to emphasize that even more, even though we've said it many times. Literally nothing he does in this movie helps. Like, he gathers evidence. They never show evidence to anyone. And when she wants to bring in the experts, he is like, I don't think we should do that. Like, he looks over some of the footage, but we don't get, like, when the really bad stuff is happening. It's not like the night that she gets dragged out of bed, or like the night where the footprints show up. They should have immediately called the demonologist or whatever and been like, yeah, these 3-toed giant chicken feet walked through, invisible chicken feet walked down our hallway, stepped in all this talcum powder, baby powder or whatever. We need help. He's just he has no plan. He is just like, I want to keep getting footage of this. That is literally his one thing, is like, he's like, I want to keep getting dope shit on camera
for his movie.
He has no plan. He has no plan for how to make things better. He just wants things to continue being bad, which is fine for him because he's not victimized at all in this movie until the last scene. Like, nothing, like, except he loses some sleep. Like, nothing bad happens to him because I don't think he cares that anything bad happens to Katie, because he shows absolutely no empathy.
They're absolutely, yeah. Okay, so a couple things here. One, they're absolutely, His main goal, like you said, for the first 25 minutes of this movie is to film a sex tape. And I think it's because he realizes, like, you know what? I'm not good as a day trader. I'm not good at my job. What I think I'd be good at is the one thing that I know more than anything else, amateur pornography. So I'm going to try and become an amateur pornographer. You know who's going to help? My cute girlfriend, Jenna Fisher. She's going to help, and I'm going to film this movie. And then, oh, shit. Damn it, she thinks she's being haunted by a demon. Maybe I can use this. Maybe I won't be an amateur pornographer. Maybe I'll be an indie filmmaker. And, yeah, that sounds classier. I'll do that, you know? Still want to have some sex stuff in my movie, though, so I'm going to still try and film a sex scene. It's a horror movie. Oh, shit, there's no sex scene? All right, you know what? My friends are going to come and help scare this lady. And so I think, yeah, like, you could justify, and again, this makes my dad's reading of this movie make so much more sense, of just, like, the reason he's not showing other people is because he doesn't want to give the footage away. He doesn't want to show people the trailer for the movie and get them to not watch it. You know, he wants to save it. He doesn't want to give out a sizzle reel. But I think that you could make the argument that he, A, I just don't think he's good at his job, because the movie also posits that he is watching 6 to 8 hours of footage every day. Like, and you can say he's fast forwarding it, but the things that he's catching, like the door kind of closing, or like, you know, the light coming on in the background, those things are so minute that, like, I don't know if you could catch it by fast forwarding with the technology that we see, where it's like the old school, like, fuzzy fast forwarding bar. Like, you wouldn't be able to catch that unless you were just watching it and then the door closed. So he's watching 8 hours of footage every day. So maybe that's it. Maybe he just is like, you know what, I don't want to watch footage today. So there are some days that he's just missing stuff. Because the Ouija board should have been you should have, like, compressed that onto your computer, send that to the demonologist. You know, you get a letter back, email back from the mailer demonologist, who's like, yo, this email address not good no more. I think that there's so much evidence here that Mika is just, like, not interested in helping. He just wants to figure this out for his own glory. But then you're like, well, what glory is it? Like, what, like, genuinely, what does Mika get out of this experience? Yeah. Which brings us to the question that you asked yesterday. Who is a worse person, Mika or Christian from Midsommar?
Like I said, I would vote... I would argue Mika, just because he is 100% aware that a lot of bad stuff is happening and continues to, like, try to make it worse without having any plan on how to make it better. And like we discussed yesterday, I think emotionally we want to say Christian is worse because he's victimizing Florence Pugh.
Don't you? And no one should ever do that.
He forgets her birthday, but he doesn't, like, instigate the demon that's been haunting her since she was 5 years old. So it's like, I would say Mika's worse.
Yeah, but also, like, they've been dating. So they've been, okay, well, here, let's compare contrast. They've been dating same amount of time. You get a couple that is seemingly happy together in Katie and Mika. Like, with the exception of the demon, for some reason, Katie still seems like she regularly calls him cute. She regularly, like, flirts with him. There's still a little bit of, like, you can definitely tell, like, that these two are into each other. I don't know why, but they are. I watch Midsommar, a movie that I love, that I think is one of the best movies of the decade. And I'm just like, man, this is the saddest couple I have ever seen. Like, these two white people are so sad, and for all intents and purposes kind of have no reason to be. They're just two nice people who don't want to hurt the other one's feelings by breaking up with them, which is so much worse. But Christian is so implicitly evil in the shit that he pulls, and, like, and the what he ignores, that it's like, the fact that you don't know her birthday, you've been dating for like 4 years, I kind of think that that's just as bad as buying a camera to make your own amateur porn / amateur horror film.
I don't know. They're both bad. They're both definitely, you definitely see a lot more manipulation and, I don't know, I guess just straight up bad significant other behavior from Christian.
Well, he's a PhD student. He's smarter.
Yeah, so I'll give the win to you in this argument.
Fuck you, don't hurt Florence. Don't hurt Flo. okay, so the Ouija board catches on fire when it's left alone. And it spells out a message. I must have been looking away. What did the message spell? Or did they just not know?
I don't know if he figured out what it spelled.
God, this guy is fucking useless. He is so useless.
He finds that like exorcism website later, and I think there's like a symbol on it that matches the like whatever was like burned into the Ouija board. I think that's like the connection that's made. But I kind of zoned out at a couple like moments in this movie as well, so I might be remembering that wrong. But I think that's because he has the part where he's got like the notebook and he's like, what's the name? Nadine, and just like. Now he doesn't figure anything out, and I think eventually it's just like that website, and then they like watch the videos of the exorcisms.
Apparently that scene was like a lot longer in the original cut of the movie. They like showed a full exorcism in it, and then they were like, no, let's cut this shit down significantly.
I do like in that scene they start to watch the video and Katie's like, oh, she's pretty, and I'm like, yeah, that's the important part of this video.
It's like
that's the big takeaway.
Demons attack pretty girls too. Oh no.
I thought only Uggos had to worry about getting haunted.
And Mika's like, why do you think I can't figure out what genre I want to go into? Like Oh, that's interesting. According to the timestamp on the video, many of the demonic activities occur between 2 and 3:30 a.m. This time is known as dead time among paranormal researchers, and it's when demons, spirits, and entities are supposed to be the most active.
I do trust paranormal researchers. I do. I don't think they're full of shit. So that
good for you, man. I'm proud of you for being so brave and speaking out. Speak your truth.
I do want to take a quick moment because there is something, this is a very small nitpicking thing that I want to point out, but it shows like the first night they're getting, like one of the first couple nights they're getting into bed with the camera set up. They have like their whole bed set up, you know, like big comforter, 17 pillows, which is like, we've got like 9 pillows on our bed at any given time. And Cindy bought 2 new pillows yesterday. So like that tracks. So they start pulling off all the useless pillows, which is a nightly occurrence in my house. And then they pull the entire blanket off of the bed and put it on the floor, and they sleep under the sheet every night. And like, I don't know if that decision was made just because it's easier to do the film, like it looks better on camera when they do the filming, and like the sheet gets lifted from over Katie's leg and like her foot gets pulled and stuff like that. I don't know if it's just because that's easier to do if there's no blanket, or it looks better if there's no blanket on the bed. So they're like, well, if there's going to be one night when she is only under a sheet, we're going to have to do it every night. But I'm just like, these people have a comforter on their bed that they pull off every single night. And I know they're like in San Diego, so it's not needed for warmth, but I'm still just like, that is like,
they definitely have central air in a house like that. That's a house. They have a pool.
Yeah, like they, like I'm just like, when I saw that, I was just like, that is fucking wild.
Well, and also the whole fact that I don't know. I think that the only reason they do that, honestly, is because Toby's too old. He can't lift up the blanket. he can't lift up the comforter. He can only do a sheet. And Katie kind of knows that in the back of her mind, so she's trying to help him out. But yeah, I don't know. That bothered me a lot yesterday too when I was watching it. And I was just like, wait a minute, there's no blanket there. Why are they sleeping under a sheet? Yeah, I don't get it. The only time I've ever done that, we don't have air conditioning in our apartment. So like Lauren and I sleep under a sheet in like the summertime when it's hot.
Yeah, I mean, I used to have to do that at our old apartment sometimes because we had like radiator heat in our apartment, but our bedroom floor was directly above the boiler for the entire building, so our bedroom gets sweltering during the winter, so I would have to like just do a sheet for the winter. But I was just like, that's like, when I saw that, I was just like, an every night thing in San Diego where I know it is like 70 degrees every day no matter what.
No, they apparently did cast a role they cast a doctor, a real paranormal investigator named Dr. Johan Averies in this movie. None of his footage appears in the film, but they wanted to give the movie some credibility. And then I think, I wonder what that means that they edited out his entire role.
Credibility? What? What is that?
Well, I mean, they were like, well, we've got to get all, Toby like, can only attack during 2 and 3:30 a.m. It's the only time that he's...
I mean, I'm boycotting the trial of the Chicago 7 because they don't have lawyers playing the lawyers.
That's a good point.
You got to have credibility. Like, you got to have an actual professional lending some credibility to the role or like
what's the point?
If I find out that Mika Sloat isn't an actual day trader... I'm done with this movie, and my recommendation at the end of this is void.
Are you going to do Wolf of Wall Street again? Is that what you're doing? Are you doing Margin Call this time? What do you recommend? I'm recommending the movie about Mika's rise to power. It's called Boiler Room. I think you'll love it. let's see what the fuck happens next. They discover... they do the powder move, where they put all this powder on the floor. Katie's like, okay... This is the last big thing we're going to do. Once we're done with this, we're not going to bother this creepy demon anymore. It's going to be fine. So Mika puts all of this, I guess, like confectioner sugar, salt, something.
It's just baby bitch, some kind of fine powder.
Baby bitch.
I was going to say baby powder.
Bitch powder, and he throws it all over the ground to try and catch some footy footprints. And surprise, surprise, there'd be some footprints. It's three, you know, these three-toed flying purple people eaters that are just walking through this house. This scene was, this was pretty unfortunate. Yesterday we were watching it because we were watching it in the afternoon. And so just because of the light that was coming in, we couldn't see the footsteps forming until she turned on the light. But I remember sitting being in theaters, and this was a big trailer moment, like where you see the footprints kind of show up. And I remember being so fucking scared at this point in the movie. This 10-minute chunk is... for my money, this is, like, the chunk of the movie. From them seeing the footprints to then going into the hallway to seeing the attic door has been opened to then crawling up into the attic to finding the burnt picture of Katie when she was 8 years old. This is like some really like my stomach churns and I'm unsettled kind of bullshit. Like, yeah. I think this is all really like really, really efficiently made like movie making right here.
Yeah. And also it's like, it is something that Mika does say in the movie, but like the footprints come in, but there are no footprints mm-hmm. going out. Like that's like the, you realize like that as it's happening. And it's just like, that's scary. Cause it's like, oh, he's probably still in there. Unless he just, I don't know, disappeared or whatever.
I think it's obvious what happened.
But yeah, I agree with that. I would say, okay, did you have a bit you wanted to do? Did I just step on a bit and go for it?
No, I was just going to say the attic is a portal to hell. I said Toby parks his horse and buggy up there and he takes it back to the old age community. He gets himself a toffee and he goes on his way.
but yeah, I would agree. I think like that, from when that happens to like the end is definitely like, it's like they don't really the I think the proportion of it, because in the first like half or whatever you get, it's for the most part, it's like the ratio is probably like 90% downtime / calm time to like 10% like I might get scared right now time. And like then it's basically like from the footprints, it is basically just like 90% this stuff, like anything, like cause stuff starts happening during the day, like the pictures start getting knocked down, like, and then you've got at night her like getting dragged down the hallway, and then like the actual finale of the movie. So it doesn't really like let up once it gets to the
So one night, I don't know if I'm doing this out of order or not, but one night Katie wakes up and goes outside and Mika finds her outside and she's like, no, I don't want to go in. And she doesn't remember doing that. She doesn't remember getting up and going out. And then eventually she starts to get like, you know, you could tell that this lady is getting demon sick. So she's, you know, she's sweating. She's looking, there's a lot of smoky eye going on. She's holding a crucifix, which like, I don't know. I'm like, we've all seen so many movies about demons at this point, and I know these people have as well, that crucifix doesn't work. So, like...
Yeah, but he also, like, he burns it with the... Like, he burns two things in the fireplace, the picture for her, from the childhood home and the crucifix. And I'm just like, the crucifix just got introduced. Like, it wasn't even a big thing. She was just gripping it. Like, are we assuming that this has something to do with it? Because I would guess that she was grabbing it for safety, even though it didn't do anything. But, like, that was just a weird choice.
I always buy the crucifix move in a movie with characters that are inherently religious, or it's been a theme before.
Yeah.
But there's something about it where, you know, and we get a moment where, like, you know, Mika goes down and sees her, like, sees Katie sitting on the downstairs, and she's, like, really out of it, and she's holding the crucifix so tight that her hand is bleeding, which is, you know, a pretty, you know, creepy image there. But I almost want to see something where it's like you get a group of people or a couple that is so, like, agnostic that as soon as a demon presents itself and they're like, oh, fuck, we better get religious quick. And the demon's like, no, that's why I chose you guys. And, like...
It's what scared straight religion.
Yeah, they like they resort to like religion at the last minute, and they're like pick up a crucifix and their hand gets burned, and it's like, nope, too late. You should have chosen that earlier. Like, now you're prime time demon. Like, chow. But yeah, so I don't know. I it's something that I've never seen that move before, but I'm always a little hesitant when that gets introduced in like movies like this, because it feels like. On the one hand, it feels like a hat tip.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good, I guess it's a good sign of showing, because, like, they show, it's, I mean, kind of simple, like, they show no signs of being religious the whole movie. It's not like, you know, 3 weeks pass, and they never mention going to church on Sunday, so I would assume they're not religious. But, like, I would guess it would be, it's just, like, desperation. Yeah.
There's 100% like, more talk about making a sex tape in this movie than there is about going to church. And you can quote me on that.
Yeah. So then what's left? Like, that stuff happens, and then there's, like, he's trying to get them to, like, leave and go to a hotel to leave the house.
She's
and
like, it's going to follow me.
She won't leave. Yeah, she's, like, laying in bed, and she's like, yeah, let's go. Like, I agree we should go. And then, like, he packs and then gets the car ready, and then he's trying to get her to leave, and she's, like, in bed, and she's like, I don't want to go. And then he, like, leaves her alone, but he leaves the camera on her, and she, like, says to no one visible anyway, that is just, like, she's just, like, it's okay, he won't bother us anymore, or something like that, and then smiles. And then we get, like, the finale, like, the last night.
At this point, watching the movie, it's really like, oof, man, this, things are not looking good for Eli Roth, Dane Cook. This is, and you know what? I'm 100% okay with that. So... We go into the last night where she gets up. She has the creepy thing between, you know, and during the dead hours or whatever the fuck. She gets up. I'm just inviting a demon right now, like, to just come and, like, prove me wrong by, like, talking shit about their whole thing. But during the dead hours, she gets out of bed. She looks at him for, like, a couple hours. Then she walks downstairs and screams her head off. Mika goes running out. This whole section here is awesome. Screams. Mika runs downstairs to save her. There's all of this screaming. There's all of this confusion. And then it's just like dead quiet. Mm-hmm. At this point, I'm going to narrate the rest of the movie from the perspective of my father, who, again, does not like horror movies. And his whole theory, remember, about Mika's, you know, filming a horror film to gaslight Katie is out the window at this point. And he's genuinely like, I have no idea what's happening. As soon as the voices stop, as soon as they stop screaming, I look over at my dad, whose jaw is wide open. And he is terrified. And it's super quiet. And he just looks over at me and he goes... Well, I guess it's not a good night at that house. And as soon, before he can get the sentence out, Mika is yeeted at the camera. Yeah. And my dad just goes, fuck me. And
Yeah, I mean, that's like that. That's the every time I've seen the movie before, because that's like, right, that's the theatrical ending. That's the ending I saw in theaters. That's the that is a shot in the trailer for this movie. That is like the like climax of the movie. The like was supposed to be like the big jump scare. And it's in the trailer.
Yeah, it's so shitty.
Which is just, so it's like, so like once it's coming, like when you're watching it, like in the theater, you know it's about to happen. You just don't know when it's going to happen. So it's arguably maybe the least effective moment of the movie. Like, it's just a matter of when. So, like, I definitely know, I think I remember being disappointed with that in the theater. But every, like you said, everything up to that is really well done. Like, the her staring at him, her going downstairs, the screaming, him going down, like, screaming intensifying, the dead quiet, the footsteps that seem like they're going on way too long super to be going up the stairs. Yeah, and they're really heavy. And then just, like, him getting thrown at the camera. Like, that would have been really good if it wasn't, you know, part of the trailer. And then they do kind of, like, the same thing, right, where she, like, jumps at the camera and her, like, face is, like, demonic. So it's kind of like the ending of Sinister that we were complaining about. But it's a lot less cheesy. But, yeah, so, but then when, and, you know, in the version that I just watched, the alternate ending, it's everything is the same up until Mika getting thrown at the camera. It's just Katie walks in, closes the door. She has like a knife in her hand and she's covered in blood. And then she just like cuts her own throat. And that's the end.
That's before.
And neither of those endings are the ending that the director originally wanted.
Yeah. Do you want to tell this one?
Do you, I don't remember the details.
Yeah, I've got it pulled up right here.
There's, okay, so yeah, maybe, I know what it roughly is, but if you want to read it.
Then. Yeah, so this is the original ending that Oren Peli wanted for this film. Katie waking up, standing by the bed, then going downstairs. She then calls Mika in panic. Mika goes downstairs screaming and worrying, and then when we hear him freaking out, and then quiet. Someone is going up the stairs. It reveals to be Katie, with a bloody shirt and a bloody knife in her hand. She sits by the bed, rocking back and forth for hours. That go by quickly. Her friend comes by to visit the house. We hear her downstairs freaking out about Mika being dead on the floor, and then she leaves. The police arrive at the house. Two cops. They see the body. They go upstairs. They find Katie, and she snaps out and panics and says, "Where is Mika?" While the police tell her to drop the knife, she doesn't, and they shoot her to death.
Oh my god.
That's too much shit going on. It's too much shit. Like, I admire it. And so, the ending, that was the ending that that the director wanted. I don't know if this is true or not, but do you know who talked him out of that ending and into the ending that we got? Fucking Steven Spielberg. Right? Was like, which makes sense, you know, Poltergeist, it makes sense that he's just kind of like, yeah, you're going to want to do this, that way you open it up for squeakles, baby. You know? Or Shriekles, excuse me. There was another ending that was planned where the possessed Katie cornered Mika and bludgeoned him to death with this camera, and the viewers were watching the camera's POV. That sounds awesome.
Wild.
But that version of the ending was so complicated to film, and not to mention brutal, that Peli never actually shot it. I think that if they had done that, like, I kind of think that that's how the whole series should end. With something like that. I think we have the technology now to pull that off. And I know they've already planned on coming out with another one of these movies. Was supposed to come out this year, is now coming out next year. And then two more movies in the series, actually. Yeah.
Jeez.
Which I never saw I guess it's the sixth one, The Ghost Dimension. But now they're getting into like fucking time travel and crazy shit. And I'm just not really, I'm not into that. I need something that's entirely filmed from, like, a teddy cam or nothing. Like, because there's some spooky shit in the second movie with, like, a babysitter and, like, a camera watching the babysitter. And, like, you know.
Yeah, is the second one the one that has, like, the thing with the sheet? Where, like, the sheet.
Yeah.
Or no, is that. That's. I think that's the third one, right? Where they think, like, one of the kids is under the sheet.
Yeah, no. That is, they think that is the third one. The third one is the sheet. But okay. The second one is the babysitter is asleep on the couch. And the sheet just gets pulled off of her, and it's super creepy. And then it's like that for 30 seconds. She kind of like adjusts because she's cold, and you're just like, oh shit, man, that ghost just pulled. And like right when you're having that thought, she just gets like pulled from the couch completely. Because Toby's stronger. Toby's much stronger in that movie than he is in this movie.
Maybe I'll have to rewatch the second and
third
one.
They're fun. I you know, they're not groundbreaking or anything. But I want to get to this conversation now since we're done talking about the movie itself. You were also on, we did Blair Witch on this show together. I'm on record, I don't like that movie. I like the ending of that movie. Where do you stand on Blair Witch versus Paranormal Activity?
I've seen this movie more. Blair Witch, I think every time I've seen Blair Witch, I've watched it with you, and it was in an environment where people in the room were making fun of the movie. So I don't know if it's the most fair assessment, because the first time it was like you, me, Christian, Tyler, and
I think Eric, right?
Who else in the room? Eric, that was the night that like Tyler was like shooting silly string at the screen every time anything happened, and he gets talked about on this podcast.
I have a vivid memory of him screaming something happened and then spraying the TV with silly string.
And then the second time was for this, but it was like you, Lauren, and I, and we were watching it at like 10 a.m. or like pretty early in the morning, or maybe it was like 11 or noon. But even then, it was like still bright in the room. I think I like Blair Witch. I think it's really well done. And I like a lot of the stuff that they actually do for scares in that movie more than what happens in this movie. This movie, I guess I have more of like a personal history with. Because like I said, I've seen it more. I've seen the sequels. I was 7 when Blair Witch came out, so I didn't see it until like so much long. I wasn't like, you know, consciously going to movies or anything like that in the time where Blair Witch was like super huge. It was like the, you know, the biggest movie on earth and like setting all this like historical precedent and like as far as like movie like the found footage genre and like how much money a movie can make on a small budget like that. So I would say I'd probably lean more towards this movie, even though, like I said, I think I appreciate more of like the actual, what is actually being attempted in the scare department in Blair Witch.
Yeah.
I think the characters, like all of the characters both have like in Paranormal Activity, you basically have like one sympathetic character and one very unsympathetic character. And then I think in Blair Witch, it's just like, it's like all three characters kind of are more well-rounded, and like at some points they're sympathetic and at other points they're unsympathetic, like when the guy like gets rid of the map or whatever. But like I think it does a good job of showing their all of their like mutual like descent into like paranoia and madness and like fear. So I would and hopefully I'm not completely contradicting everything I said when a year ago when I like, you know, 15 minutes after I actually watched the movie, because like I said, I do like that movie quite a bit. I actually want to watch it because I don't think Sydney's ever seen it. So I do want to watch it with her.
Do it and report back.
But
yeah, let me know.
Yeah, I will. So that's kind of like I don't really want to pick one. I would just say I like both.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd choose this, but. But I think that's because I've been on record before about, like, again, Blair Witch is a movie that I want to like, and I just kind of, it just doesn't click for me. I respect it, but I don't like it. And this movie, I think, is, like, it's the trashier version of it. It's the more, you know, candy version of it, but I have more fun with it. Because I don't think it takes its... I think it's because it's, like, the pressure was off of a movie like this because Blair Witch had already been made. So they were able to just kind of, like, build on that and have a little bit more fun.
I also think with Blair Witch, I think the escalation is far... Like, there is definitely, like... I mean, like, any horror movie, right? There is, like, there's an escalation throughout over how serious things are happening. Or at least with, like, with the found footage stuff, kind of. I think there's, like, there's a pretty consistent through most movies escalation of how things happen. And I think with Blair Witch, that escalation still happens, but the things that happen are a lot less like flashy and like enjoyable in the moment. Like in Blair Witch, you don't really get that much that's visual until like the last few minutes of the movie, right? A lot of it is just like they're lost in the woods. They don't know where they're going. They lost the map. They don't have any food. Like these totems are popping up around mm-hmm. their campsite, but you don't see anything happen. And like paranormal activity for the most part, like even though Toby is invisible for the most part, you see on camera what like the results of what he's doing, even if you're not seeing
yeah.
him.
Yeah.
So I think it is definitely like a pretty different as far as how they go about doing these things. And I can definitely see why like one would appeal more than the other. For like I said, personally, I enjoy both movies for like different reasons, but I could definitely see how Paranormal Activity would like stand out more from that yeah. perspective.
Yeah, that's most of what I've got. Both of the actors were paid a whopping $500 for their performances in this movie. Insane. Katie has appeared in 5 Paranormal Activity films. Mika has appeared in 2. And
the actors or the characters?
The actors. The character, I think okay. the character still has appeared in, the character of Katie has appeared in 5.
Yeah, well, I couldn't remember if the actress, like the adult Katie, showed up in the third one. I'm guessing if she does, it's like a cameo at the end or the beginning or something, like footage of like current day Katie, like in addition to like everything that actually happens in the movie.
Yeah,
which is,
I'd need to rewatch it.
Her as a child.
I want to rewatch it. I like I said, I think that third one is actually pretty is very fun.
Yeah, I remember yeah, enjoying it a lot.
Crazy it gets. Let's see here. What else do I got? The whole movie was shot at Oren Peli's house, and he spent a year before the movie getting a shit ton of renovations done to his house to make it look more lived in and less like, apparently it was like a lot of like blank white walls because he was, you know, just a struggling filmmaker.
Yeah.
Shot the whole thing on a home digital camera, shot the movie, like you said, for $15,000. Do you want to guess how much this movie made?
I don't know if it's fair to guess because I think I looked at it. Is it like $183 million or
close,
something like that? Or is it like astronomically more than that? 193.
But it is the second most profitable film ever made based on a return of investment. The first being the Blair Witch Project. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which cost $22,000 and made $240 million. This one cost was acquired for $350,000 and went on to make $193 million. But again, like we said, this kind of is the beginning of Blumhouse. It's the beginning of a huge trend in found footage horror films. And I guess I want to use this to kind of like lead into, is there, at the risk of stepping on recommendations at the end, which of the found footage horror films from this era do you find like successful, or do you find that there's more of a, do you find that there's a greater success rate or a lesser success rate for found footage?
I mean, I would probably say just based on volume, it's probably lesser. 'Cause even like in this series, what, there's 5 or 6 now. And I think I think half of them are good. So even there, it's like a 50-50 shot. I think I've been pretty much enjoyed most that I've gone out of my way to see. Like, there's some that I've seen that I liked less than others. But like, I mean, like I said, like we watched The Houses That October Built yesterday, and I liked most of the movie, but the ending I didn't think really lived up to the setup. I'm trying to avoid talking about some movies because I want to mention them in the recommendations, but I would say I definitely think it's like a pretty low barrier for what's like for entry. Like it's a good, I guess it's like a good medium for like low investment movies being made, which is like exactly what it became, mm-hmm. right? It's just like that's why we got such a slew of them, because it was like, oh, you can make a movie for $20,000 and it'll make $200 million, which obviously didn't happen with others because Paranormal Activity is still the highest grossing. But even still, if you like do 1% as well of that, like you're still doing pretty well. Or you know, not 1%, but anyway, like there's others that are like, there are a lot of like the found footage like anthologies, which even then like you split it up into 6 and it's like even more hit or miss. Like VHS, like I think I've seen VHS 1 and 2, and I think across those it's like 12 mini films and like 5 or 6 of them are good. Yeah. So it's easy to like get caught up in the low investment and then just like not invest enough, I think. But I think it does, since a lot of it is like does appear so low tech and everything, because that's kind of like, you can't really have, you know, like special effects and everything included to an insanely high degree with the found footage, without it seeming like it's breaking away from the style that most of the movie is going for anyway. I would say like it definitely makes these movies kind of like live and die on the concept and the performances a lot more, which is like one of the reasons this is so successful, is that like the two main performances are very good. Like, even if you don't like the character of Mika, like the guy, most of his work is like voice work, 'cause he's behind the camera most of the time, but he does a good job. Like we said, we both really like the Katie performance. And like, it's one of the reasons why this movie is so successful, is like the concept is pretty simple. It's executed well. The ramp up is really well done and the performances are really good. So it's like, it's
so a is that movie. A, you recommend this movie in 2020?
Repeat that.
Do you recommend this movie in 2020?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, I mean, it's an hour and 26 minutes. It's super short. Like, it flies by. Like I said, I watched it like Thursday morning. I woke up to go for a run, but there was like a monsoon outside, so I turned this on because we'd talked about discussing it, and like I enjoyed watching it. I would definitely recommend it.
I think this movie is a blast. This movie is kind of like eating popcorn for dinner. It's like, you know, it's not going to keep you very full for a long time, but I'd be hard pressed to think of a better, like, I just kind of want to go and watch a scary movie that I don't need to think too much about. Like, you're going to be hard pressed to find one that is as kind of culturally significant in terms of American movie making of the last 20 years, American horror movie making in the last 20 years. And one that is like, I think really kind of, inventive and fun with the form. Great. So like we always do at this time, is there a modern analog for Paranormal Activity? I'm excited to hear what you got for this.
I'm going to say one, if like for another, like really good found footage, movie, Hell House LLC, which is a movie that Sydney and I watched last Halloween, which I'd never heard of before, and she found it scrolling through like Hulu or Amazon or something. But it's basically about a group of friends that they like run haunted houses during the Halloween season, and they get like a really good deal on this like shut down like hotel, not like a big hotel, it's like a like maybe I guess like a little bed and breakfast would be a better word, in New York. And the footage is just like they're kind of like behind the scenes, they're making like a behind the scenes documentary of them like going from the first time they see this place to like setting it up for the season, and then like having people go through it. And like it's a really good horror movie, really good found footage movie. And I would say, I mean, if you just want to see like another good, like kind of like possession / demon haunting horror movie that's not found footage, just watch Hereditary. It's like one of the 3 or 4 scariest movies of the last decade. Absolutely incredible. Loved it. I was like, I think I was the only person in the theater when I saw it that actually enjoyed it. If I can go off the grumblings of everyone that I walked past on the way out, and I had to convince Sydney that it was a good movie on the walk back home. But yeah, great movie. So those would be my
recommendations. Great recommendations. I need to check out Hell House LLC. I'm excited about that.
You should.
So yeah, I've got one found footage and I've got one not found footage. The found footage, I've been repping this series since quarantine started when I've watched both of them. But specifically Unfriended 2, Dark Web. Folks, watch these movies. They're so good. They're really, really great horror films. The second one is definitely more of a thriller than it is a horror film, but it's a sequel kind of purely in style alone. It has none of the same kind of story beats as the first movie, follows none of the same characters from the first movie, and is a completely different type of scare from the first movie, which I've never seen in a franchise before. And so I was like obsessed with how different, like it genuinely feels like a completely different, like they could have just not even included this in this franchise and it would have been a different movie. But yeah.
I haven't seen the second one. I was shocked at how good the first one was.
Genuinely one of my favorite movies I've seen in a long time.
Yeah, that was such a good, that was like 21 Jump Street level. Like Sydney and I rented 21 Jump Street from Redbox like a year after it was in theaters, like expecting to be like, oh yeah, maybe this will be like pretty funny, and like didn't stop laughing the entire time it was on. Like that, this was like the horror version of that like surprise. Like we turned it on just like, yeah, some people say it's good, and then just were like super into it the whole way. So if you think the second one is like even better, I'll definitely have to.
Yeah, check it's that like out. If you want to watch again, it's like if you want to watch an hour and a half long episode of The Real World unfold over Zoom while some spooky shit happens, it's incredible. The other one, literally taking the theme of a ghost or a demon that won't let you go no matter where you go. I realize none of us have ever recommended It Follows on this show, and it's a great movie.
I've really been wanting to rewatch that. We almost turned it on yesterday, and then we turned on the houses that October built instead. I remember seeing It Follows in theaters at the Music Box. It was the first movie I ever saw at the Music Box, and I really enjoyed it. I don't think Bubba or Sydney really liked it that much. Sydney wants to watch it again to give it another shot because she didn't like it the first time, but I definitely really want to.
Yeah, we missed it in theaters, but we rented it and watched it. Highly underrated score in that movie as well. Really, really good score.
Yeah, I actually was like turned it on the other day while I was trying to do some work. Yeah, very good.
Yeah, that's what I got. That's Paranormal Activity. Thank you very much for listening, folks. Or
I for an anti recommendation, I would say if you're looking for a good found footage movie and you want to watch Wreck, don't rent it on Amazon because they don't tell you that the only version available on Amazon is not a Spanish audio with subtitles. It is the English dub, and they do not tell you that, or at least they did not make it obvious enough when I rented it. And I got 3 minutes in, realized it was dubbed and not subbed, and I turned it off, and I was just $4.
Yeah, Not Another Film Podcast is a big subbed, not dubbed proponent. So we definitely want to push that.
So I would definitely say watch Wreck, because I haven't seen Wreck. I've seen Quarantine, and I liked Quarantine, and everything I've said heard is that Wreck is, which is the, like, Quarantine is just the English remake of it, is that Wreck is much better. So first of all, watch Wreck, and then tell me how you watched it with English
Can
subtitles.
Confirm that statement
in,
is true.
In your five-star review that you leave, post a link for where to watch it in with English subtitles.
Other thing to recommend, I showed this to my dad immediately after the episode. There's an episode of Nathan for You where it's season 2 episode 1 where he gets a realtor to sign off on her houses by claiming that they're 100% ghost and demon free.
We had that episode.
And they literally hire a psychic, a demonologist, and a priest to come in and perform an exorcism. It's the greatest double feature with this movie is to then watch that. It's season 2, episode 1. I can't recommend it more highly. That's my full recommendation, is like then watch Unfriended 2 and It Follows and Hell House LLC. But watch that Nathan for You episode. Cole, you got anything you want to talk about? Anything you want to plug?
No, I'll just plug voting. Please vote. I believe I'm going Monday. I was going to go this week, but I was waiting for a negative COVID test. And then also go listening to the Vanishing Act pod, which I am not affiliated with at all, except I know a lot of the people who worked on it, and they are all very talented. So go and listen to that.
If you've listened to it, you should know Cole's the inspiration for the character of Augie Eckhart. he's a right bastard. No, yeah, thank you very much, Cole. That's very, very nice. Yeah, I'm also going to plug voting. Do it. We have links in our bio for checking your registration, getting a plan together. Also, feel free to check out knockfordemocracy.org. They're still doing phone banking for the next couple weeks leading up to elections. I've worked with them. I've done some phone banking for them the last couple weeks. If you are like me and kind of get a little bit of social anxiety, phone banking or the idea of phone banking kind of makes your butthole tighten up a little bit. They're really, really great, and they give you an awesome script. The first 20 minutes of every session is literally them talking through what to do, how to work the technology, and how to deal with people who answer the phone who are all across the political spectrum. So highly recommend working with knockfordemocracy.org. It's four, the number four, not the word. But thank you very much for listening, folks. Have a great time. Have a spooky and safe Halloween. Wear your goddamn masks. Make sure that they cover your nose and mouth. Wash those dirty hands, stay inside, and vote. God damn it.